FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is February 19th, 2018. Well, you heard all about what happened in Parkland, Florida, a town that's only about 10 miles from where I am, as the crow flies. Hey, why did it happen? Why was it allowed to happen? All these questions, I'm sure, will never be answered, just like they haven't been answered with the Las Vegas shooter and so many others. I mean, if you look at the string of warnings that the FBI had about terrorists over the past 10 years, actually going back to before 9/11 to the first attack on the World Trade Center, it is shocking. Well, our old friend George Mathias is with us. ModernCombativeSystems.net is where you find him. And first, though, George, we're going to talk about training self-defense dogs. Oh, if you got any questions for George or myself, just email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. So, George, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Kerry, thanks for having me.
So you're doing basically self-protection dogs now, training dogs to keep you secure in your home, your place of business. Seems like it's really a growing industry.
Yeah, Kerry, it's huge. Yeah, I have actually backed off a little bit on the personal protection stuff, firearms and combatives. I got tired of telling people the same things over and over. They just want to go out and buy new toys and not worry about the training. So something that's brought me a lot of peace and I really enjoy doing is training dogs. And the idea is that, you know, we do everything from Chihuahuas to St. Bernards. The idea is to have, you know, a well-behaved, calm dog that you can have with you anywhere legally possible, and that you can control things like, you know, what your dog barks at so it's not barking at anything. But there's somebody, you know, walking around your property, you know, the dog knows enough to bark.
Right. So dog is what you would call like one of the layers of security, right?
Yeah, I like it because unlike, you know, electrical security system or wireless or whatever, thing about a dog has a personal investment in keeping the pack safe, and the dog knows every square inch of the house.
Yeah, I remember my dog. The second somebody stepped on the curb outside the house, that dog started barking and was like totally on guard for the situation. So their sensory perception is so much keener than ours. And then there's the intimidation factor. Even if they're not intimidating by their presence or their bark, it's they're sounding the alarm and could be other people hear it. Who knows? They're really effective in that regard.
They are, Kerry. And I'll tell you, in my entire career as a police officer, I only responded to one, what I would call a good residential alarm where somebody had actually broken in. And actually what it was, somebody had left their garage door open and the people, whoever broke in, had breached in through the door leading into the house. But most of the time, you know, they're false alarms called by the weather or whatnot. And so if you have a burglar alarm system, you know, that call has to go to the call center, and then that call center has to call, you know, the dispatcher. You have to get an officer dispatch. If you live in a new development, you know, a brand new development, you know, your address may not be, you know, in the EMS books yet. So it might take them a while to get to you, especially if you live in an affluent neighborhood, you know, where the police aren't called a lot. And, you know, you might have a trooper coming from 20 minutes away. I'd much rather have a, you know, dog whose presence would, you know, scare the intruder at least enough to know that the people inside the house were alerted. That's why I always tell people, if you have a dog, again, I don't care if it's, you know, a Chihuahua or a Rottweiler, you know, you put signs in the front and back of your house that say, you know, beware of dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the dog will also, if it's midnight and the dog starts barking, you're going to wake up pretty fast, especially if
exactly.
They don't usually do that, right?
Yes.
So what types of dogs are you training, George?
I have a service dog. My personal service dog, his name is Odin. He's an old English bulldog, which is actually a totally American breed. They're a throwback to what bulldogs look like in Great Britain beginning of the 18th century when they were still using them for bull baiting before they turned the bulldog into this, short, fat, squat money pit. Yeah. Old English bulldogs are actually athletic. Mm-hmm. They're very loyal. He's 19 months old. He knows over 30 verbal and hand commands. He detects marijuana and heroin, and he also does building searches, which always comes in handy. I'd say probably one of the more popular dogs in training these days are actually Labradoodles, and I'm actually a huge fan. They're, a nice medium to bigger sized dog, extremely intelligent because they're mixed with the poodle, and poodles also can be aggressive.
Really? Had no idea.
Yes. yeah. They're actually not French poodles. They're actually from Germany. And the Germans actually used them as military canines in World War I.
Right. So for the dogs you're training now, what's the most popular dog to train?
I've seen a lot of labs. Again, a lot of family dogs, a lot of labs, a lot of golden doodles, a lot of German shepherds, a lot of pit bulls, which I love specifically for service dog. They make great service dogs and, a couple bulldogs here and there, but a lot of little dogs, everything from Pomeranians, Chihuahuas, to Yorkies, and, because I train all dogs regardless of breed, I train them the exact same way. So that gives us continuity in everything we do if we have a group of bulldogs.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So do you train the dogs individually or you train them in groups?
We do both. So today I'm in the middle of house calls. I have 6 house calls today. Just left one for a puppy for a 14 week old German Shepherd puppy, starting to work on basic obedience. Now I'm on my way to one for a mixed breed that has problems with aggression with other dogs. So we're gonna meet them at a PetSmart, and I stand right in front of the door of the PetSmart and handle the dog and show the parents how to handle it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what's the biggest problem you encounter when you're training these protection dogs?
Dogs of any age pulling on a leash. Mm-hmm. The two ways that you control you establish yourself as a pack leader is through movement and food. If you're not controlling movement and food, if you're not walking your dog on a leash, your dog has no reason to follow you or view you as a pack leader.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So when they pull at the leash, what do you do? How do you get them to stop doing that?
Well, the problem is most people, there's a lot of money these days. You go to any pet store and you see all kinds of, leashes and harnesses. The two things I hate the most are the retractable leashes and the harnesses. If you put a dog on a regular choker chain or, a slip chain, as soon as they get in front of you, the connection there, the link between the collar and the leash is going to be right down their spine. As soon as the dog starts pulling forward and you start pulling backward, the dog feels like it's in a trap and they don't have any self-preservation. So they pull as hard as they can, and that's why it sounds like they're choking themselves out. So I designed a particular lead that goes up high behind the ears and behind the jaw, underneath the right ear. And so what we do, we correct the dog with a quick jerk, and it brings their concentration to the front, pulls them off balance to the side, and forces them to look at you every time they get a correction.
Interesting. So you're against the chokers, the choke collars, and the chains and all that?
Yeah, we don't use... I don't like any pincher collars or e-collars or any of that stuff because, again, you're getting a different... correction every time because it's in a different position every time. It's kind of like if you put a gun in a holster on your belt and every day you move it a quarter inch backward or forward, it's going to slow down your draw times because there's no continuity in position. It's the same way here. We use the my immediate correction lead to extinguish every unwanted behavior, everything from barking to pulling to running out the door to aggression.
Really? That's fascinating. Huh. So you want to have a successful training with a dog. What are the three most important factors to get that dog, to get him trained properly?
Stop talking to your dog like it's a baby. Stop wooing all over the dog and using high-pitched voices. Because that's what we want to use for praise. So if you just automatically give it to the dog doesn't have anything, to work for. The only time I talk to the dogs is when I'm giving commands or I'm giving praise. Don't get in the habit of repeating your commands. only say a command once and then physically enforce it. So if you want your dog to do something, you want your dog to sit, you tell him one time to sit and he does it, you got to be able to physically enforce it by putting him in a sit position. Right. You don't want to burn your commands. You want to do a lot of the key is loose leash walking and just being consistent with the dog and making sure, if you can, that one person always feeds the dog, and that's going to be the pack leader.
Gotcha. Well, it's fascinating. Yeah, I always thought you want that leash to be very relaxed and
yes, you want like
a lot of slack.
Like a, we call it the J, where it's like kind of making like a, you know, the letter J.
Right. Yeah, because then you, when you see people walking a dog like that, you know that dog is well-trained and
exactly
is very in tune with his master. So, hey, I didn't really want to bring this up, but we were kind of talking about a pre-call. So, of course, there are all these calls for gun control now, you know, that we've got to bring the gun problem, you know, to heel. And, you know, these school shootings are horrific, but the exact opposite of what their solution is, the liberal establishment solution, it's just going to lead to more shootings, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I've been saying for years, Gary, there's a reason why there's no school shootings in Israel, because all the teachers are armed.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, you know, I don't know if I want to trust the you know, teachers with a gun. Well, then do you want to entrust your child's life to them if you can't trust them with a gun?
Yeah. Yeah, they could do a lot of damage. I mean, don't get me started about the educational system. Yeah, we all know about
exactly.
that. But they're doing a lot of damage, disarmed for sure. But yeah, that argument comes in. I think there's too many schools to have a cop stationed at every school. But look, if they had to fire three administrative people in each school to get a cop stationed there, I think it's a pretty good trade-off, don't you?
Well, I don't understand why we can't use our veterans, Gary, and retired police officers. I know plenty of veterans and retired police officers that would be happy to dedicate their time.
Yeah, and those people are trained, they're trustworthy, they're battle-tested, if you will. There's a lot of reasons to go look to our veterans and retired law enforcement personnel, and yet we're not doing it. So what is it? What the heck is going on here?
Well, they don't want to relinquish that trust, and they don't want to say, you know, they don't want to admit what we already know, is that they can't protect everybody, and the police do not have the responsibility to protect the public at large. You know, the police yeah. only can show up, you know, after something already happened, and mm-hmm. we run this big thing, you know, see something, say something. And here, local authorities were at the house a bunch of times. The FBI was notified how many times, and still nothing was done. So I guess that all kind of goes out the window. The thing I find very interesting, this whole thing is, unlike all the other active shooters we're familiar with, you know, this guy was taken alive. You know, he snuck out with the you know, the rest of the kids, and then was later apprehended.
Yeah, and you know, they seem to follow an alarming pattern, all of these shootings, don't you think? Those kids all on antipsychotic drugs, antidepressants, they all put out major signals prior to the act. Oftentimes they're reported to the authorities, and the authorities can't do anything about it. To me, what this comes down to is the fact is that our ability to use the mental health law to protect the public has been completely obliterated and eliminated by the liberal Supreme Court, liberal judges, and liberalism in general.
Oh, I agree, Carrie, and I think one of the more interesting points here is that this, you know, this kid was expelled. He wasn't allowed on the property, but like a lot of businesses, you know, that don't have security, they do have security. You know, they fire somebody or they expel somebody, and they tell the person, you know, you can't come back, you know, on the property but they keep it to themselves. I wonder how many people, how many staff or how many kids knew that he was not allowed on the property at all, and they saw him and didn't think anything of it because they recognized him or didn't.
Yeah.
But then why are you going to ban somebody from a piece of property and you're not going to inform the people that, you know, you're supposed to protect, that if he shows up, call somebody? And then so what do you say to a teacher that's out there walking around the grounds unarmed? He sees this kid. What is he supposed to do? Call the police? He has a lot more options if the kid draws a gun and he's armed.
That's for sure. I mean, it's not the ideal state of affairs. This never used to happen in the past, but we've seen it happen enough that we need to be very proactive, both on the defensive side in the schools and in weeding out these bad apples and seeing to it that they're not in a position that they can harm people.
I agree.
So, I mean, hey, you were in law enforcement, for a large part of your life, and you had to deal with crazy people. And part of the thing that makes them crazy is you never really know, you're never really sure what they're going to do. So how can they be so sure that they clear these people after all these threats and everything else? I mean, the State Department of Mental Hygiene here, or health, whatever it is in Florida, they cleared the kid a year ago, said, hey, no threat here. I mean, how can they make that call? You as a police officer having to deal with them daily in often adverse situations, you weren't in a position to say they were cleared and not a threat, were you?
No, not at all. We always took it as it came. And if we could take legal action in the state of Maryland, where I was a police officer, we called an emergency petition. If there was probable cause that we could see that they were, a danger to themselves or others, we took them in for, 72-hour evaluation. And at that point, usually what they do is they go back out on the street again, but we have a big breakdown. What's changed in the last 30 years? Not the ability to own firearms or the type of firearms, but it's the disintegration of the family. I hear people talking about either this kid's dad or his mom died or she moved or whatever. Where was dad? Where are dads in all of this that, most of these shooters or all of them are males? Nobody ropes these kids in, just like training a dog. They don't have any pack leader, so they get to exert their dominance and scare people all over the place because no man, snatches them up. When I was in school, if you did something, you got into a fight and you knew a gym teacher or a coach got a hold of you, you knew you were going to pay the price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
Those days are over.
Yeah. Well, look who the teachers are now, too. Right.
Milk toast.
Yeah. There's no the concept of bringing back self-defense training to the school. Should we be doing that?
We should. We should be doing active shooter training. And there was video of actually him coming into the one room. And the thing that scares me is that in every room, no matter if it's a bathroom or it's a gymnasium, you have four corners. When you go in to clear, you have to count your corners. Well, of course, if you walk into a square room, you're going to have a corner right across from you. Well, that's where all these kids were huddled. I don't know if he didn't see them or didn't see somebody in there that he necessarily wanted to shoot. But all these kids, instead of being all around the room or up in front of the door, putting something in front of it, they all gathered into one little kill zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's terrible. Really terrible. And you got to wonder what's going on here. Well, hey, George, it's always great to have you on the show. Just tell us again where we find you, where the best place to go is.
Hey, Kerry, you can look me up on moderncombativesystems.net or mcsdogtraining.com.
All right. Hey, and again, be part of the show. Feel free to email us any issue raised here or elsewhere. Check out the Twitter feeds at Kerry Lutz. The email address is kl@kerrylutz.com. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. George, thanks so much for coming on. It's always great to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Kerry. Take care.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.